Imagine it's your wedding day, a day you've planned for your entire life. And instead of your family celebrating you on your special day, they're being told that your body is discovered.
This is the hour, the darkest place. Dante's Inferno, the devil's maze. It's a good world. Good world gone bad.
What's going on, you guys? My name is Layla.
And I'm RJ.
And we're the hosts here at Haunting Mysteries, Inc., where we talk about true crime and pretty much everything and anything that covers that topic.
That's right. And today I will be going over a true crime case.
Yeah, he's going to be going over the Annie Lay case, correct? And I have heard of that case, but not in full detail. So without further ado, let's just get into it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Quick side note for the video viewers, if you see me jot down anything on a piece of paper, I am paying attention. I'm just trying to write down any questions I have or any statements I would want to make towards the end of the video when RJ and I have our discussion of the case. So I'm not ignoring him, I swear.
So she says. Annie Lay was known as an extraordinary young woman with a beaming smile, a talented scientist, a caring friend, a helpful lab mate, and a fashionista whose click-clacking high heels signaled her arrival from a distance. Her friends, classmates, and teachers remembered what her advisor called Annieisms, which were her fondness for fried chicken, a perfectly accessorized wardrobe, and her insistence on wearing a skirt even while doing messy lab experiments. So what the advisor was referring to as Annieisms is what she thinks embodied who Annie was.
That makes sense. That's sweet.
It is. She had been an academic beast throughout high school and college and was earning her doctorate at Yale University. She was just 5 days away from getting married to the love of her life when she went missing from a lab on Yale's campus in 2009. Her dead body would be found the same day she was to be wed, and though the killer would eventually be found and convicted, the true reasons behind her death still remain a mystery. Annie Lay was born in San Jose, California on July 3, 1985. And grew up in a large, super close Vietnamese-American family. She was the valedictorian of her graduating high school class and voted most likely to be the next Einstein by her classmates. She received $160,000 in scholarships, which is approximately $230,000 today, and won a prestigious NIH, which stands for National Institutes of Health, fellowship while getting her undergraduate degree in cell developmental biology from the University of Rochester in upstate New York. During that time, she met and fell in love with Jonathan Wadowski, her husband-to-be. They set a date to get married on September 13, 2009, but unfortunately, she wouldn't live to see that day.
It's so sad.
Isn't it? It gets worse. During her time at Yale, Annie won a fellowship from the National Science Foundation while studying pharmacology in the laboratory of Dr. N. M. Bennett and monitored how different medicines affected mice. She specifically studied how some fatty acids regulate an enzyme believed to be involved in cellular metabolism. She wanted to find out whether the enzyme is linked to metabolic disease. Dr. Anton said she was happy with her life, happy with herself, and happy with her dreams. That's why Annie was always smiling. Her work contributed to a research paper that was published on November 16, 2009 in the Journal of Clinical Investigation and was dedicated to her. If y'all would like to read the article, we'll include a link so y'all can check it out.
Yeah, just give me that link and I'll post it in the description box.
I definitely will.
Also, for anyone who is listening and they want to read a scientific article, sometimes the terms they use are kind of complicated. But if you put it into ChatGPT and ask to have it translate it for you in a different reading level, it will do that for you.
For everybody that can't see what I'm doing right now, I'm going super sane because I'm so hyped because my bunny knows me so well. It drives me nuts. So I'm going to, I love you so much. Ready?
Yeah. What?
To be honest, I couldn't understand most of what the page was talking about because the words they were using are far above my knowledge and reading level. But while skimming through all the detailed information, it made me emotional because I realized how much effort was put into this one study. And that's not including every ounce of energy that was put in throughout her whole existence. And it makes me sad because after all that effort, she was taken away way too soon, erasing any future joy, discovery, or any other positive contribution to this world she could have been a part of. I'm telling you, yo, this one got me.
Do you need to take a second?
No, I'm good. This is the one that I remember. I called you crying. That one that I was like upset. This was the one. This was it.
You poor thing. Ready? I feel you though. I think I cried the last two episodes, so you were due for a turn.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
He's got a heart. Ready?
Cue the Grinch. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, smart. Dr. John Butler, Dean of the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, said Annie valued science precisely because she saw in it a moral purpose. She hoped that her research would stem the onset of metabolic disease. Friends also recalled Annie's lighter side. I don't know anyone else who could wear 5-inch heels while doing laborious mouth surgery, eat fried chicken and not gain an ounce, and use smiley faces in her presentations and not lose the respect of her audience, said fellow graduate student Tara Bancroft. Months before her disappearance, Annie wrote an article on campus safety titled Crime and Safety in New Haven for Yale Medical School's B Magazine. I tried to find this article but was unable to do so. There was a document blocked on Yale's website that said I had to log in to view it, so that might have been it. What I was able to find out about this article was that it was published in February 2009 and compares higher instances of robbery in New Haven cities that house other Ivy League schools and includes an interview with Yale Police Chief James Perotti, who offers advice such as pay attention to where you are and avoid portraying yourself as a potential victim. Simple but life-saving advice. Annie would conclude in her article, in short, New Haven is a city, and all cities have their perils, but with a little street smarts, one can avoid becoming yet another statistic.
I'm assuming New Haven's is where Yale is located?
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Annie Lay's story goes to show you that no matter how nice, hardworking, loved, smart, and safe you are, bad things happen to people who don't deserve it, so always be ready for the unexpected. On the day of her disappearance, 5 days before her wedding, on September 8, 2009, she left her apartment and took Yale Transit to Sterling Hall of Medicine, where her office was located on campus. The labs on campus were located about a mile away on 10 Amstead Street, and at approximately 10 a.m., security cameras captured footage of her walking to and entering the building, but she was never seen leaving the building. The same day, one of her roommates reported her missing at 9 p.m. to the New Haven Police Department because she didn't come home that night and was expected home hours ago, a thing that Annie never did. She was known to be punctual and to keep in constant contact with her friends. She never walked alone at night, and if she got off late from work, she'd call her friends and ask them to pick her up or walk with her. Police would later find her cell phone and pocketbook in the lab. Again, something Annie never did. Initially, police believed that there was no way that this was a homicide case, but that Annie left town because she had gotten cold feet with her wedding coming up.
That is so frustrating. That their auto assumption with someone who is so incredibly responsible and precise is she just fled. Okay, you're giving me a face. For the audio listener, she's giving him a face. Like, just wait for it. So let's wait for it. Let's go ahead.
This is why me and Bunny are together. I love it. I hate how they assumed that Annie had cold feet, because it sounds like they were more lax than if they would have thought she was in danger. Obviously, in this specific case, there's probably no chance that they could have saved Annie, but maybe they could have found her sooner. It also makes me wonder if there was a chance to save her, would they have missed the opportunity to save her because of the lack of urgency?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of this case and how much time they had before she was, whatever happened to her and her time of death. But every second freaking counts. Like that's like criminal hunting 101.
The first 48.
Exactly. So frustrating.
Yep.
Dang.
But that's another reason why I don't know if I would want to be an officer, because it's just like, I would be stressed out so much, you know, trying to figure this stuff out, because I wouldn't want to be a part of the statistic where it's like, I let someone slip away.
No, the thing is, I understand why that would be hard on somebody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like what matters, what makes a difference between the judgment and that hatred from the communities is your genuine effort. Mm-hmm. And to assume automatically that this person got cold feet just because they were about to get married when someone has said, this is not like her, this is her personality, this is all that she's accomplished, is so demeaning. It's kind of like being like, oh, just women, like women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you know her friends were like, oh, she always does this, boop, boop, boop. And then like all of a sudden, like now she just, oh, she has cold feet. She's correct. Not punctual. You know, she doesn't.
No. That's ridiculous. Or at least cover your bases. You think that's your theory. At least cover your bases. Go check it out.
Exactly. Start from point A and then work your way through
yeah.
it. Let that be like point Q or R or something. You know what I mean? So just something to think about the next time any of us assume that a situation isn't a big deal. Remember that it's better to be safe or proactive than sorry. Their beliefs of Annie having cold feet changed immediately on September 12th when they discovered bloody clothing in the ceiling of one of the rooms in the building she was working in and declared the entire building a crime scene. Yale Daily News stated that on the very next day, police became aware of a decomposing body-like smell coming from the building, and a cadaver dogs were brought in to aid the investigation. When the police went to Yale's campus to begin their investigation, they found that the building and general area were monitored by about 70 security cameras. In addition, the building and rooms could only be accessed by those with a Yale identification card. While reviewing the footage, they could see Annie enter the lab in room G13, but never leave. On the day that Annie Leigh was supposed to be walking down the aisle at her wedding, her decomposing body was found at 5 p.m., jammed upside down in a wall, behind a utility panel in the basement of the laboratory building. An unidentified police officer stated, "The killer just crushed her in there. She was like mush. She was so smashed up you couldn't recognize her."
That's disgusting.
You know what I mean? You wonder why it's just like, what? It gets worse.
God.
It was later determined by the state medical examiner that Annie Leigh died from traumatic asphyxiation by neck compression. It was also discovered that she had a broken collarbone and broken jaw that occurred while she was still alive. These are all horrible things that happened to Annie. And just the thought of this happening to you would make me become an aggressive person, to say the least. But these next discoveries would change me into an absolute monster. Her bra was pushed up and her panties were down to her ankles. Since she was found shoved into the wall, I could have possibly understood how her bra was pushed up. But her panties being down to her ankles? There's no excuse besides foul play, and with the further condemning evidence of detectives finding semen on her panties, as well as other parts of her body, seems self-explanatory to me. Prior to Annie's body being found, authorities already focused on Raymond Clark, who worked as a lab technician who aided Annie in her studies in a janitorial type of role. Clark was not a student at Yale, and was known to give students a hard time if they left their labs dirty, which made more work for him. According to an unknown source, Clark sent Annie an email complaining about her not cleaning her mice cages after one of her studies. On September 10th, 2 days after Annie was reported missing, but before her body was found, police saw Clark go in and out of her lab room several times. While waiting for the FBI, police noticed Clark walk over to the box of wipes on a steel pushcart inside lab room G13 and move them so the blood spatter faced the opposite direction. Then he leaned against the cart and made small talk with cops, but the officer had already seen the box and what it had appeared to be a stain and moved it back to where it had been. He thinks he's slick, but he's not. Later, Clark returned to the room and scrubbed the floor grate and drain with SOS pads and cleaning solution, something police thought was odd. Officer Sabrina Wood of Yale University Police thought it was unusual that Clark was scrubbing the drain because it did not appear to need cleaning.
So the police officers you're referring to right now are the security at Yale?
It's the security at Yale, actual police, and FBI. Okay. It's gotcha, like everybody. Gotcha. Like, this is a big thing. Cops sent the wipes and a blood-stained lab coat to the state forensic lab, which found DNA from Annie as well as a man on the items. As police investigated on September 10th, Raymond approached Officer Jennifer Garcia of the Yale University Police Department and said he had known Annie for 4 months, but that they did not socialize and did not spend time together outside of work. He also helped lay out a timeline for September 8th. Raymond arrived at work around 7 a.m., and used a key card to enter several rooms where animals are housed in the basement. Around 10:30 a.m., he said he saw Annie working in room G13. At noon, Raymond left for lunch and returned at 12:30 p.m. At some time between 12:30 and 12:45 p.m., Annie was gathering her notebook and two bags of mouse food and getting ready to leave. At 12:45 p.m., Raymond said he left the Amstad building. The fire alarm went off at 1:55 p.m., which was set off by steam from equipment used to sterilize lab equipment. Raymond said it went off between 2 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. The documents also pointed out what officials observed, including that Clark changed his clothes at least once while the FBI processed the scene. Then, there was a scratch on his face and left bicep, which he blamed one of his cats at home for.
So while the this is happening at the school?
Correct.
While this, the whole building's been shut down?
Correct.
How is he allowed in that building?
I mean, that's a great question. I would assume that it was because he was there for questioning.
Okay, that makes
sense. But then again, why was he even permitted to clean stuff if it's locked down?
Maybe he was trying to be sneaky.
No, he definitely, I mean, yeah, maybe he was trying to
like be sneaky. Like maybe they let him in, or maybe he offered information on purpose so he could access those grounds.
Like they do all the time. Like you say that all the time. Like they'll, the killer come back and then try to be a part of the investigation.
Yeah, that's serial killer profiling. They've learned that a lot of serial killers or pedos, they'll go back to the crime scene even though there's an active investigation because they get off on it. Mm-hmm. So I am thinking that he went back to the crime scene possibly to give free information because he was there.
That's what I was going
to
say.
To try to be sneaky and clean up or do what he has to do.
Figure out how much they know. I'm right there with
you.
Correct,
yeah.
Police issued a warrant for Clark's DNA and submitted it for testing. An athletic sock officials found inside a drop ceiling outside the lab area had Clark and Annie's DNA. Inside the drop ceiling, located outside the lab area, officials also found a bloody rubber glove and a pair of Viking work boots with a missing shoelace and blood-stained heels. Ray C was written on the back of the boot.
What an absolute idiot.
That just goes without saying. The solidifying piece of evidence that led to Raymond's arrest on September 17th was the DNA sample that was found on the sock that contained both Annie and Raymond's DNA, proving he was the man that they were looking for. On January, so a little bit later, 2010, Clark initially pleaded not guilty, but later changed his plea in exchange for a shorter prison term. On March 17th, 2011, in an exchange for a 44-year prison sentence, Raymond Clark pled guilty to the murder of Annie Lay, but he had to be found guilty of an attempt to commit sexual assault, which added another 20 years. So now I'm going to ask for some bleeps because this shit irritates me, okay?
Real quick, was his semen not enough evidence?
Lenny, you've been ruining my whole episode.
I know, I do this.
You've been ruining
my
whole
episode. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So the beeps, get the beeps ready, okay, kids?
I got them.
How the fuck is this piece of shit found guilty of an attempt? What more evidence do you need to prove that this piece of shit essayed this poor young woman? You think he just jerked it in the corner and then threw that shit at her? Give me a fucking break. Fuck this sentence. I don't know if he's able to get out early because of good behavior or whatever other BS they can come with for this piece of shit, but Raymond needs to stay in jail till he dies with a 0% chance of getting out.
I'm not sure how he was able to even get a deal.
Dude, my neck is tingling, bro.
No, I know. I can tell. That's why I'm trying to stay calm and soothe. But I don't understand how he was able to get a deal. Because this is like the easiest case, right? Like, they found his shoes, his DNA. There's him on the security cameras, I'm assuming.
And it's like, he obviously thought of how to try to get away with it too. It's not like he was like, oh, it was me, I did it. He also, like, besides like all the horrible stuff he did, he tried to go out of his way to hide everything too. Like, he's doing all these crazy things.
Yeah, I'm actually very curious as to how he was able to even get a deal. I mean, maybe a really good lawyer, I don't know.
Even though the police captured this sad excuse of a man that took Annie Lay's life and took whatever else he wanted from her because he's that type of monster, we still don't know exactly why this all happened. When it was Raymond's turn to speak to the court, He did so with crocodile tears in his eyes and read his statement.
I take full responsibility for my actions. I alone am responsible for the death of Annie Lay and causing tremendous pain to all who loved and cared about Annie Lay. I have always tried to do the right thing and stay out of trouble, but I failed. I took a life and continued to lie about it while Annie's friends, family, and fiancé sat and wait. I really never wanted to harm anyone or cause emotional pain to anyone. All I wanted was to be a good son, a good brother, and a good fiancé, but again, I failed. I blame only myself, and there are no excuses for what I have done. Annie was and will always be a wonderful person. By far a better person than I will ever be in my life. I'm sorry I lied. I'm sorry I ruined lives, and I'm sorry for taking Annie's life.
Do you have anything to say? Because I'm going to go on.
There's more to what he said?
That's what I have for what he said.
Nothing. Like, I have nothing. Okay. I'm speechless.
So I... Please save it, Raymond. This just sounds like you're trying to save your image. No one believes you or feels sorry for you. I hate this guy so much. Yeah. Superior Court Judge Roland Fasano said, "The suffering, the anguish of the families is heartbreaking." Judge Fasano would go on to declare Raymond's sentence. For murder, 44 years to serve. For attempted sexual assault in the first degree, 20 years to run concurrently.
For those who are not watching the video, RJ, just the reason you heard a pause is because on the video format, he did two, what are those called?
Air quotes. Air quotes, yeah.
He did giant air quotes around attempted because he doesn't believe it's attempted.
Nuts. It's driving me nuts. So this is going to annoy me even more, and you too. But there was a link that sent me to a page where I could see where and how long Raymond is going to be incarcerated. And when I went to see how many years it was for, it just said the 44 years. And nothing about the added 20 for the essay attempt. When I read that, I got super heated. What do I make of that? If he's only in jail for 44 years, that means the latest he'd be released is September 16th, 2053, and he'd be 68 years old. So depending on his health, Raymond could still live for years as a free man. And again, that's without him possibly getting out early for whatever reason. And if any of this becomes factual, the system will have greatly failed Annie Lay. It is noted, though, that the entire sentence may not be shown on the page and that you can log in to see the full sentence. So maybe the other 20 years are in there. But regardless, there shouldn't be a number. It should say till death. Raymond remains incarcerated at Cheshire Correctional Institution in New Haven County, Connecticut. The majority of the people who knew Raymond Clark personally thought there was no way he could commit such a sick and twisted crime.
Eye roll. No, I say eye roll because it's always said.
Always.
Always.
He can never do it. And again, back to what, why would they show you that? No one's going to show you that.
No, yeah. No one's going to be like, hey, what do you do for fun? Are you golf? Oh, I'm a pedo.
ISA.
Oh, yeah, ISA women. Oh, yeah, yeah, I kidnap.
Cool. Yeah, come over for a barbecue. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Oh, you want to join me next Friday for a pedo session? Oh, sure. Yeah, they never do that. Never.
Margaret Brady went to high school with Raymond and said he was the type of guy to say hi to everyone, a genuinely nice person, and that she never saw anything unusual, weird, or angry about him. Again, duh. Another woman said he was very intelligent and a good kid.
I mean, he could have been a good kid.
He could have, especially things might have changed. Maybe something happened. Who knows? But Raymond's high school girlfriend, Jessica Del Rocco, had other memories of him that weren't so well known. Just hours after Raymond's arrest, Jessica posted on her Facebook saying, and I quote, "Yeah, it's been a rough few days. I've known since Sunday and I'm handling this as best I can. It's just bringing back everything. I feel like I'm 16 all over again."
Oh, dude, 16 and he was already like this?
Mm-hmm. I'll go on to describe what she was talking about.
Rough.
During an interview on ABC News, Jessica would go on to say, and I quote, "He was very popular. He was, you know, a very nice guy. Everybody loved him. He was a good student. He was a great baseball player. And I mean, at first, he was perfect. He was charming. He was sweet. He took me out. It was great." After the initial honeymoon phase, Jessica would go on to describe what started to alarm her about Raymond, and I quote, "About 3 months into everything, he started to get a little controlling in the fact where I was, what I could and couldn't wear, and where I couldn't go. and how I should speak and like stuff like that. And then just from there, just to escalate away. Jessica was asked if it frightened her and she responded, and I quote, "It was just unusual for me. I never had somebody tell me what I could and couldn't do before. I mean, that's just the way that it started with him." Jessica was then asked if it was an everyday thing of him trying to control her, and she would go on to say, and I quote, "Yeah, you know, it's don't go here and don't be friends with these boys and these girls, and you're talking too much, or you're not talking loud enough, stuff like that." So it's a little weird, right?
It's psychotic.
It's like. After, Jessica was asked if she ever tried to ask why he was treating her like that. She said, and I quote, "It would cause such a big fight that it wasn't even worth it." And it's like, if you're in that type of relationship, why even be in the relationship? You can't have a discussion.
I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair because sometimes when you're in those type of relationship, I've been in that type of relationship. And you know about my situation with my ex. And he was that type of dude. And it's one of those things where when you're in it, there's so many different things that come into play. Like you make excuses for that person because you think you love them or you think you're in love with them. And yet also I didn't have the best example of a male
treating a woman with kindness
growing up. And so that also came into play. So I don't think it's fair to say like, why would you stay? Why would you not leave? Like who puts up with that? Because sometimes you don't know any better. And until you know what love actually is, you might not have an idea of what love is and you think you're in love.
That's fair. And I redact my statement.
Good job.
Then Jessica was asked about Raymond's temper. And she said, and I quote, "It escalated a lot after that. He would get very angry, you know, often. He would frighten me. He did get physical." She was then asked about what she meant by physical. And she started to tear up and said that she didn't want to talk about that. She then couldn't speak on what happened when she wanted to break up with Raymond because the authorities told her she wasn't allowed to discuss what happened, but that she went through school and the police for her to feel safe about breaking up with Raymond. So I don't know if that would like incriminate him or like if there was a reason, because I don't know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't know why she wouldn't be allowed to say that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I can't think of a single reason why she wouldn't be allowed to say that.
Well, I believe it's because like the trial was still happening at this point.
Yeah, but she's not for him; she's against him.
True. I don't know really how like the courtrooms work, like with like the whole jury, like and trying to like convey to them.
The only thing I could possibly think of as a reason why they wouldn't allow her to speak on it was because of statute of limitations, which is when it refers to the amount of time you have to be able to start legal proceedings against a crime. Mm. And if that amount of time passes by, even if you are guilty, you can't be tried on it.
Okay.
So maybe that's why she wasn't allowed to speak on it, because he was on trial for this and the time that had already gone by. I'm not sure, because each state has different laws and each crime has different stipulations for them.
You're so cute.
Thank you.
In the wake of Annie's death, members of many parts of the Yale community came together to create a scholarship fund that would commemorate her life and flawless spirit in a lasting way by supporting the work of current graduate students. Soon after, the Yale Corporation established the Annie Lay Fellowship to aid doctoral candidates in the BBS program, and I quote, "whose demonstrated commitment to bettering the world around them, an outstanding record and research exemplified the qualities represented in the life and career of Annie Lay." How cute. Isn't that so adorable?
That is super sweet. I like that a lot.
For those that don't know what BBS stands for, it's Biomedical and Biological Sciences. Dr. Elias Luis said, "Annie came to Yale to study and train as a biomedical scientist. She also cared about people and treated everyone with respect. It is for these reasons that Yale University established the fellowship in her memory." It's tragic, but it's so beautiful, like how like loved she was. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it so tragic.
It's beautiful that even though her physical body's gone, there's a way that her name and her memory can continue.
That's why I wanted to put it in. I love that they did that for her, because like she deserves it. Like obviously I didn't know her, but just doing this, I, you know, it just Makes me feel
good. Yeah, I mean, there's no way when you're studying, I think this is a point that a lot of people don't get to see or hear whenever they're listening to. Like, so for listeners of true crime content or true crime cases, right, you can sit there and listen to a case and be like, that's tragic, that's terrible. But when you take the time to sit down, do the research yourself, like you're reading article after article, you're looking at the autopsy reports, you're looking at interviews with the family members, the loved ones, you're seeing their face like smile and move and all these different things. And then you put that all together. It's so incredibly disheartening. And it's like you build this connection of their character.
Yeah, it's like a real, almost like relationship you have.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way where I think that I can connect to them in a way that their loved ones who actually knew them could. No. I just mean that it's a different experience when you're doing so much research that you get emotional about it.
Yeah, 100%. And then the last quote I have from one of the doctors that absolutely adored her, Dr. John D. Alvaro said, "One of the many tragic aspects about losing Annie was that it was only after her death that the Yale community at large learned about her and her wonderful qualities. The fellowship in her name now enables us to identify and celebrate other talented and selfless students, some of the hidden gems among the student body."
Dude, that's so sad.
You know, it's hard making this shit hard to read. Which is so true and sad at the same time. Because if this absolutely tragic event didn't happen,
it's okay, take your time.
I most likely wouldn't have never gotten to know who Annie Lay was and how much of an impact she had on everyone that actually got to know her. There's no question that I wish this never happened to Annie, but in the smallest of positives that came from this, I'm glad I got to know a little bit about Annie Lay. May God bring peace to your family and loved ones with the knowledge of being able to be with you in the future.
You're messing me up, dude.
Dude.
Okay, really side note. Do you need a second?
I'm good. That's it for my episode. But yeah, when I was writing this, dude, I laugh a lot. It's like,
That's what I was about to give the disclaimer about.
I laugh and I say it's funny a lot as like kind of like my cure-all.
Your coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to clarify because we both do that. When we cry, we kind of like get embarrassed and then we laugh.
Because it's not embarrassing to cry, but like doing this, I'm trying to like get it out professionally to the best of my capability. And that's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah. So when you hear us laugh after we cry, we're not some joker psychos.
No, not at all. I actually have a lot of respect for Annie.
I don't know why we do that. We both do that.
I feel like my family, my brothers do that too.
My sister and I, we both.
Yeah, she cracks up when she's crying.
Yeah.
But I knew when I finished this that I knew that I was going to have an issue with it. I didn't know that. I know I kind of teared up a little bit earlier. I didn't think I was going to do that then. But I knew like when we got to this, I was going to choke up a little bit.
Okay, so excellent job. First things first. Everyone should give RJ an awesome review for this podcast episode.
That'd be really nice.
If you believe he did a great job, if you think he did a terrible job, please just don't leave a single review. Just leave, never come back. I have some points that I jotted down on the notebook that I kind of want to cover since you are done discussing the details of the case. Mm-hmm. This is just a quick statement. I thought that it was really sad that she was doing an article on safety mm-hmm. and it was her who was failed on safety in the campus. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Campus and by the authorities. That brings me to my next point. You clarified that there's a chance that he was sentenced for the sexual assault and it's the R word that we can't really say. And the reason we filter certain words is because of, you know, when on YouTube they have censorship. So maybe he did get sentenced for that. If they didn't sentence him for that, it's just one of those things where it reflects on why a lot of women do not come forward when they are essayed or the R word, because a lot of times it's not taken seriously. And depending on the judge, they don't want to throw away guys' future on what they think has no actual evidence.
Yeah, but what if that was your daughter, bro?
So interesting that you say that. There was a case not too long ago that I saw on TikTok where this girl, young girl, I believe she had like knocked out at a party after drinking. Okay. And she woke up to some dude on top of her performing
unsolicited.
Is that the correct word? Actions. Okay. I'm sure that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
I'm making stuff up.
And so she woke up, she said, get off me. So then he like rolled over and got off, but he had already done the act, like parts of the act. Okay. Yeah. So I guess she ends up pressing charges. The judge, the jury found him guilty. The judge overturned what they decided on.
I know the judge could do
and
that.
Said, me neither. And said, not guilty. And said he didn't want to throw away this man's future based off of this. In an interview with a news interviewer or something like that. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
The reporter?
Reporter. Yeah, my words are just not there. The reporter asked something in regards to, what if that were your daughter? To which he had a very smug response that said, my daughter wouldn't have been putting herself in that situation. So blaming the girl for being at a party.
Because she was drinking?
Not only drinking, but that's not even the whole thing, because my sister and I, back when I was younger, I used to go to parties a lot. I was very cautious, but my sister, you know, my sister, she's much friendlier, right? And no, that's not what I meant. She was just, she's friendly. I've always been a lot more of a B-I-T-C-H, and then she hasn't. And so, but I've always been very protective of her. So someone came around with shots. I said, hell no, because I never saw them pour it. She took it. And within 5 minutes, she was blacked out. I had to take care of her for the rest of the night. That's not necessarily her putting herself in that position. Someone took an action to get her to be that blacked out.
And take advantage of her.
And take advantage of her.
100%.
The only reason that it happened is because I was there. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's a little frustrating because a lot of women won't come forward about the abuse, for they don't believe they're going to be believed. They don't know if they have enough evidence, because if your body doesn't show physical signs of being raped, they're not going to do anything about it. And lastly, the chances of you finding that person and them getting a long enough sentence that makes you feel like you're safe is rare. And actually, this is my last point, is there's also a lot of women who lie about being essayed or raped for financial gain or whatever gain they can possibly,
or
revenge. Yep. So I would say that that is the most frustrating type of person that there is, anyone who fakes it. And of course, there's also male victims who don't come forward about it. That happens to them as well. So I just wanted to touch base a little bit on my frustrations of the legal system around those actions. I understand that a lot of women don't want to come forward because it's not taken seriously. And I also understand that a lot of non-victims pretending to be victims have made it even harder for real victims to get justice.
And I think those non-victims that claim SA, I think that if they are proven that they were lying,
should be convicted
of that and serve the sentence that the other person would have served, because there's been a lot of people that have served prison terms for nothing.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
And again, that's not denouncing the people that actually do get essayed. I hope that no one ever has to feel that. You know what I mean? And I couldn't even imagine.
No, but if there's solid evidence, like actual solid evidence that someone faked being a victim of that, I think that they should be convicted.
But yeah, no, I agree with the fake thing. But again, like you said, that they have to like show, like their bodies have to show. What if he has a small, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So that was actually a predicament that, They had a harder time proving it for certain parts of the cases for the Golden State Killer, because the Golden State Killer, which I will be covering soon. Actually, I should cover it. It's a well-known case, but if y'all want me to cover it, just comment down below. Leave a review if you want me to cover it. And if you're on YouTube, just comment it down below that you want me to cover it.
I hate that guy.
But he had a small ween, and that was kind of harder on certain parts of his cases.
This is folding it. This is folding it in half.
I
want to
cover that. So that's a possibility too. So I don't know. It's a tricky situation. Okay. Last point, and then we're going to wrap this up.
Thank God.
I didn't hear you touch on anything that the fiance came out and said or the family said.
So there was some articles about her, Annie's fiance, talking about, you know, at the funeral and stuff like that. I just didn't put this in here because I don't know if I would have been able to make it through it.
Okay, so it's more of a like emotional.
Yeah, because even her mom, dude, her mom was on the stand and like she was, you know, crying, saying, I can't remember, because even like her aunt got up there too. And like I read it, but yeah, I was like.
Is that one of the articles you have sourced?
I can source it.
Sources, so I can put it in the description so that people who do want to, I understand that was like a tough case. I remember you called me crying, but.
Dude, I had a hard time just reading what they said nice about her. Imagine like her family and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
No, I understand. I was just wondering if they ever did come forward with this.
They actually had two funerals. Actually, there was one that was held, where her husband, cause he's a Jewish, and they did it in like one of his temples. In, I think it was like New York. And okay. They had one also in California.
Oh, so. Wait, so they went on with the wedding in her honor?
No, they didn't go on with the wedding.
Oh, I'm sorry, there was a funeral.
There was two funerals. So okay. there was one closer to
That's
Yale.
That's sweet that he did the his religion.
He was a G, like, yeah. Because he literally, like, he went to, he like orchestrated all of it. Like, That's he nice really loved her. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah. It's like a lot of
But I think it's like
too.
A beautiful touch to that, like, you know, him being Jewish and like having their traditions of how someone should be buried in their honor, mm-hmm. right? I think it's beautiful that he respected, that he did it not only for her family, but even though they didn't get to walk down the aisle together, he was still able to do that in her honor for mm-hmm. what he believed in his religion, mm-hmm. Being the right thing or the emotional. I don't know how to explain it.
Being what felt right for him.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. It was really like, again, like I saw it all in there. But again, I just was like, I don't know if I could do it.
No, I understand. Cause I, like I said, I know there's a lot that goes into this that you get emotionally connected. Mm-hmm. So I get it. But I think I've talked enough. I don't know if there's anything.
Finally, you said I didn't want to be the one to say it and get people all mad at me.
To be fair, quite a few people told me that they like when we discuss the case at the end of the case, because then they don't get super confused while they're listening to the case.
No, that's
and
true,
I had
though.
A lot to say.
Yeah, I know. We ran out of three batteries.
Is there anything else you would want to say before we go into the announcements and the ending of this episode?
No, I think we've said a lot in this episode, and we've done a good job in letting people know who Annie Lay was, and I'm happy with it.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Haunting Mysteries, Inc. Do not forget that if you like the type of content we go over and if you think we're doing a good job, please leave us a good review. If you're thinking we're doing a bad job, just peace out. I don't want your damn review. But yeah.
And you can lie to us. That's all good.
Yeah. But yeah, don't forget to, you know, subscribe, follow, comment, because y'all don't comment very often.
It would be nice to hear what they have to say.
It would be. It would be nice to hear what you have to say. So if you're still here and you're listening to the end of the episode, can you at least comment?
Let's get a little ghost emoji or something.
A ghost
like
emoji?
That.
Yeah, let's do a ghost emoji or a heart emoji. Ghost for RJ, heart for Layla. Ghost and heart for both of us.
And then it's a black heart, by the way. She loves the color
I love
of black.
The black. Yeah, I love the black heart. So yeah, and you can do that on the video version, which is on YouTube, which we're going to be linking in the bio. And I think that's enough for an outro. So we'll see y'all next Thursday with the next episode, which I will be covering. So
we'll see y'all next Thursday.
Bye.
Peace.